The kind of wisdom the Bible offers us takes discipline to extract, though, a humble heart and a willingness to understand. If you think about it in this way. The most precious gems aren't found on the surface of the ground. You need to bring a pick. You need to bring a shovel. You see, you've got to dig for those. Spending time in the Bible is not always convenient, or it's not for me anyway.
Welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero of New Hope West in Eugene, Oregon. Not long ago, a giant redwood, towering hundreds of feet high, came crashing to the ground. It had stood in the forest since before America became a nation. And what brought it down, you ask? It wasn't the wind or rain, it wasn't fire, it was something that could destroy you or me. Here's Pastor Wayne to explain in a message entitled, Sacred Enclosures.
In Northern California, giant sequoias abound. I mean, these immense trees are stalwart and solid and have lived for hundreds of years, but they didn't start out like this. In around 1600, a tiny seedling poked up through the virgin soil. Now, fast forward throughout the years and decades as America grew as a country, these giant trees became towering titans of the forest. In fact, some have soared over 250 to 300 feet high into the California sunshine. Think about it. That's like a 30-story building. But just several years ago, one of these trees fell to the earth in a thundering crash. It was the first of the forest's magnificent sequoias to fall. The Forest Service authorized an investigation. I mean, what was it that had the power to slay such a giant? It wasn't a huge windstorm. It wasn't a fire or a flood or even a lightning strike. Foot traffic. Thousands of feet of people walking around these trees, compromising the root system. And when that happens, this is the result. The tree falls because the roots have been compromised. And so their suggestion, their remedy, they were going to put enclosures around these venerable trees to keep people from trampling on the root system. Enclosures, important. You see, over the years, hundreds, if not thousands of visitors would visit this forest and walk around these trees, taking pictures, listening to guides talk about the history of that tree, children playing, chasing one another around these trees. Foot traffic would cause the loosening of the root system. And after a century or more of foot traffic around the base of the tree, it damaged the root system to such an extent that it contributed to its collapse. These venerable trees would not be able to survive if there were no protection, if there wasn't a sacred enclosure around the root systems. And what's true for the sequoias is also true for you and for me. We have delicate spiritual root systems, and unless we find a way to protect and nourish them, we too are prone to fall. It may be in one great physical, emotional, moral collapse, or it could be little by little, gradually weakening our lives and eroding our personalities, our faith. And believe me, I know. It was one of my friends, Jeremiah, who saved my life. There was a time in my life where my personal boat had capsized. I had depleted all the things in my system that should have kept me going until my body's chemistry was exhausted. I had lost my vision and my desire to continue. I was constantly checking to see if I had enough saved so I could retire early. Through many months of agony, I got rid of as much activity as I could in order to try and loosen the noose that was tightening around my heart. But one thing I never stopped was my daily devotions, my time listening to God and His Word. Oh, I'm glad. Because, you know, it was about to save my future. I remember it was during an early morning coffee time, I poured my heart out in the book of Jeremiah. I was talking to Jeremiah, I was reading, and I was just lamenting. I noticed with Jeremiah that we had something in common. It seemed like he had run into the same wall that I had hit. And Jeremiah had been ridiculed and disregarded. He had been surrounded by hopelessness and unbelief. And Jeremiah said in the 17th chapter, he said, "Where is the word of the Lord? Let it now be fulfilled." It was like he spoke the things I was just thinking about. I mean, I felt so fried and discarded. I was thrashing in a sea of despair, and there was really no help in sight as far as I could see. It was like I was saying, "Come on, God, you said you'd help. Now would be a really good time, thank you." And it was like Jeremiah was saying the same thing, because I was ready to cash it all in and try another line of work. I was tired of shepherding people who really could care less. And in fact, they were getting a bit antagonistic towards it. But it was the next verse that saved me. It was a statement from a friend, Jeremiah, gentle but firm. It was as if he was saying it straight to me. Let me give you his words. He said, "You can run, Wayne, but," and I quote, "but as for me, I have not hurried away from being a shepherd after thee." Jeremiah said it in a way that only a friend could. Rough, but not coarse, straight, but not wounding. He was telling me, "You can leave if you want to, but Wayne, God called me to be a shepherd. You can do what you want, but I'm staying with the program." It was a challenge from one friend to another. It kept me alive, saved my ministry, and it gave me the strength I couldn't do without. It was as if he was putting a sacred enclosure around my roots that saved me from falling. It was not an absence of problems, but the sacred enclosure guarded the foundation of my life that allowed me to keep standing. In Luke chapter 10, Jesus tells a story of protecting life's root systems. Mary and Martha, two sisters, welcomed him into their home. Now, both sisters dearly loved Jesus. Both Mary and Martha recognized Jesus as the long-awaited Messiah, the Son of God. But once Jesus came, Mary dropped all of her activities, all of her preparations, and Mary went and sat at the feet of Jesus, listening to his word. She had eyes only for him. She had ears only to catch his every word. Now, Martha, however, her sister, saw the job unfinished in the kitchen. She kept her busyness going at a feverish pitch. And finally, her volcanic frustration erupted. Read with me these next words. It's from Luke 10. Let's read this together. It says this: "She came to him and asked, 'Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me.' 'Martha, Martha,' the Lord answered, 'you're worried and upset about so many things, but few things are needed, really only one. And Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her.'" You see, what Mary had chosen, her desire to cultivate her relationship with Jesus above all else, that would never be taken away from her. Not for an eternity. A sacred enclosure. It's something you choose. We can all criticize poor Martha for becoming flustered in the kitchen while her sister Mary sat in the living room. But how are we any different? Really, There will always be demands vying for our time. If you think about it, we're both Martha and Mary, aren't we? The choices you make regarding the foundations of your life have eternal implications that go far beyond your lifespan on earth. Jesus says that when you boil all of life down to the basics, not much is truly important. Only one. Just one, he says, is essential. One thing. And Mary had found the headwaters of life, the source of heaven's well, and the source that fuels and sustains absolutely everything. Here it is. It's time with the Master. It's quiet, unhurried moments in the presence of Christ, just as Mary modeled for us. When life comes down to its most basic issues, the Bible makes it very clear for us. One thing, getting back to the source. One thing is essential, knowing Christ. Will we choose to spend quiet, reflective time alone with the Lord? Are we going to allow life's pressures to work us into a frazzle? Will we build a sacred enclosure around our root system? Or are we going to allow frenzied foot traffic to erode our spiritual roots and send us crashing to the earth? Mary made her choice, and so must you, so must I. Protecting and cultivating your spiritual root system isn't something that you can snap your fingers at and it happens automatically. It's not some pill that you can swallow that'll bring you perfect health and wealth and an ideal family. No. But if you will take that time with the Master and choose to do that, it will give you wide open access to an all-powerful and loving God who will personally walk with you step by step. If you make Mary's choice yours, then you'll find Mary's reward to be yours. The Bible gives us many divine mentors to follow. But you'll also find in the Bible stories of people that we don't want to be like. Mary is someone we do want to be like. But in contrast, the Bible will give you the other side so that you can compare and see what's going on. It'll give you some examples of what not to do. God uses saints and scoundrels, heroes and zeros. Because life offers us two very effective teachers. Do you think about it? Both teachers are top flight instructors, and neither comes cheap. And we have to choose one or the other. And if we choose neither, remember this, the second will be chosen for you. You say, well, what are the two teachers? Wisdom and consequences. Mrs. Wisdom and Mr. Consequences, two teachers. Now, the teacher of wisdom will amaze you with her lessons. The teacher consequences will leave you breathless, but not in a good way. Consequences is by far the tougher teacher of the two. You want to know the biggest difference between the two teachers, consequences and wisdom? Here it is. Wisdom will teach you the lesson before you make the mistake, and then you can choose to make the mistake or not. On the other hand, the teacher consequences will demand that you make the mistake first, and then he will teach you the if only. I would have done this. Then he'll teach you the lesson. The choice you should have made, he will show you after the mistake. But then you'll have to live with the consequences. Solomon put it like this: a prudent person foresees the danger and takes precautions, but the foolish one goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. Well, to help us learn from wisdom, God chose 400 of his top people and put their raw, unedited stories in a whole library of books, 66 of them. Gather 66 of these books, books about men and women, kings and slaves, soldiers, prophets, prostitutes, and fishermen, and put them into one collection. The Bible records it all, the good and the bad. Paul the Apostle would later write, he'd say this, "These things were written for our instruction upon whom the ends of the ages have come." Why did God pack all of these unedited accounts into the Bible? Because it's for us. God had these stories written down, chronicled, recorded, so that through them, we could gain the wisdom of the ages. You can actually walk with Esau and ask him, "Why did you sell your birthright?" You can actually sit by the fire with David and ask him how he felt when Absalom turned on him, or what he had to wrestle with on the inside when Nathan confronted him about Bathsheba. Ask him about his if onlys. You see, God wrote it all down for us so we don't have to make the same mistakes and suffer the consequences. The kind of wisdom the Bible offers us takes discipline to extract, though, a humble heart and a willingness to understand. If you think about it in this way. The most precious gems aren't found on the surface of the ground. You need to bring a pick. You need to bring a shovel. You see, you've got to dig for those. Spending time in the Bible is not always convenient, or it's not for me anyway. It's not easy. And sometimes, I have to admit, after digging for a while, it leaves a blister or two. Some days, it may feel like a drag. It's tough. But the pain of discipline costs far less than the pain of regret. But the Bible's divine mentors, the men and women who have gone before us, the divine mentors have left for you and me a legacy of life skills. This legacy is yours for the taking. And it's up to you to take those life-giving insights and secure them in your heart. I remember when I began my first senior pastorate at age 31, I was shepherding a little church on the Big Island of Hawaii. After 6 months, I felt that I had drained every message from the Bible. And I knew that if I didn't get help soon, I would self-destruct. So one afternoon, I took a walk through this neighborhood, and as I approached a historic building, it dawned on me that there was an old missionary church of one of my missionary heroes there. You see, in 1837, God used a man named Titus Cohen to bring a great revival to Hawaii. Cohen loved these brown-skinned people so much that within the first 3 months of landing, now 3 months, he preached his first sermon in Hawaiian. The islanders were so impressed with his desire to reach them that they came from all the districts of that island to hear him preach in their own tongue. As a missionary neared the end of his life, he wrote an autobiography that contained unedited accounts of his activities and accomplishments. His book, called Life in Hawaii, had a copyright date of 1882. And by the time I reached Hilo, well, it had been out of print for many years. Now, in hopes of finding an old copy, I paid a visit to the Lyman Museum. To my delight, I found what I'd been hungering for. Located deep within the museum's archives, and I still remember the musty, dimly lit room, was a lone copy of Life in Hawaii. It was old and fragile, and it was a true literary treasure. To some people, the archives might have been nothing more than just a back room full of books. But to me, might as well have been a Starbucks where Pastor Titus himself and I would have long conversations over lattes. I'd visit the archives two or three times each week and in the following months, and I would copy word for word the contents of this book on a yellow pad of paper. And week after week, I would do this diligently until the librarian knew me by name. And I would fill many of these yellow legal pads. What a treasure it was. In my own handwriting, but it was his heart. It was like a long-awaited inheritance, gems of wisdom from Titus Cohen's life, and it just spilled from his marvelous book. He became my teacher, my mentor, and his life lessons began to shape and form my thinking and philosophy. It's almost impossible to convey how precious that book became to me. Old Titus Cohen mentoring the young Wayne Cordero by conversing through the medium of a brittle yellow book. Without exaggeration, I believe he saved me 25 years of suffering in my ministry. And by reading his book and absorbing his contents, I gained his wisdom without having to endure the same experiences that wounded him. I didn't have to repeat his mistakes or wade out into the mire of his failures. Why? Because he had gone before me. And now, even though Titus Cohen lived some 130 years before me, the intervening time simply vanished after I spent a ton of time in his presence through his book. In fact, his book was so precious to me that when I was moving from Hilo to Honolulu to plant another church, I went into the librarian to thank her for giving me access to the archives so I could copy this book. I said to her, I just wanted to come in and say thank you because I'm moving to Honolulu. This was after 11 years in Hilo. Well, she looked at me and she said, well, we heard that you were moving and I know how much you love this book. Well, the board had a meeting a few nights ago and we talked about you and, well, they decided to gift you with that book. She reached under her desk and handed me the copy of the book, the very one that I had been copying by hand. And I remember holding that gift, tears in my eyes. And the only thing I could say was, why didn't you give this to me sooner? Oh, how much I would have paid for a book like that. I would have gladly paid $1,000. But speculate with me for a moment. Suppose I had found a dog-eared paperback copy of this same book, Life in Hawaii, for $1.50 at a used bookstore somewhere downtown. Would the book be any less valuable? Would it contain any less potential to transform my ministry or save me years of wasted grief? Of course not. The words would be the same whether they were in a cheap paperback or locked in a vault. The difference would be the value I assigned to that book, not the price of it, the value I assigned. As helpful as Cohen's memoirs may have been to me, they can't begin to compare with the mighty insights of God's eternal word. You see, the Bible is an invaluable resource. You and I need to go to the book of all books and pursue the living truths with all our hearts. And if you're willing, the Bible will give you wisdom beyond your years. It will save you from heartache beyond your imagination. Maybe it's time you built a sacred enclosure around your time with Jesus in daily devotions and not let foot traffic be the reason why you were uprooted. Take the time, build it well, and the mentors of the Bible will be honored to walk with you. And as the old saying goes, build it and they will come. Build your sacred enclosure, and the mentors of the ages will come.
You've been listening to a message entitled Sacred Enclosures by Dr. Wayne Cordero of New Hope West in Eugene, Oregon. Thank you for listening. Until next time, remember what Pastor Wayne said.
The most precious gems aren't found on the surface of the ground. You need to bring a pick. You need to bring a shovel. You see, you've got to dig for those. Some days, it may feel like a drag. It's tough. But the pain of discipline costs far less than the pain of regret.
Now for Pastor Wayne and all the family at New Hope, God bless you and aloha.